The University of Detroit Mercy presents another encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor radio program. Today's show takes us back to January 2003.
The University Tower chimes ring in another session of Ask the Professor, the radio show where you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers, answers and questions. I'm your host, Kathy Bush, and today it's just me and the boys here in the Briggs basement. How exciting. And the lovely sound of the dumpster in the back, indeed. If you hear any large crashes, we're not doing On the Waterfront again or anything here, okay?
Could have been a contender.
We're just kind of moving about some offices. So there's not the sound of retiring professors being tossed into dumpsters. It's just a whole lot of accumulated
stuff. Can I say defenestration on the air?
Yeah.
Phase retirement really is.
That's right. So let me introduce our panel on my right from the Department of Mathematics and Math Education. It's Professor Jeffrey Boat.
Howdy.
Howdy, back at ya.
Looking forward to having education over on this campus, just right upstairs.
Absolutely. And you went through a move this summer, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So how do you find your new digs?
Oh, I love it over there in engineering. It's air conditioned.
Oh, there you go. Hey, pretty nice. That is good. Well, it's air conditioned now in Detroit. It's about 31 degrees.
Yeah.
So that does it that way. At the far end of the table from the Department of Communication Studies, our man in media, even though he doesn't dress in all black, it's Professor Jerry Kurtzinger.
But I broke out the black down jacket today.
You did. Absolutely. We had snow this morning, the evil white stuff from the sky.
We're rooting for sunshine for the parade next week.
Oh, yes.
So we do not all freeze to death.
Yes.
On Woodward there.
That's the Detroit
in high-definition television.
That's
on WDIV.
Right. Oh, excellent. Are they going to have any bobblehead type things going on?
Well, I think these guys who have to hold these fishpole microphones, don't know it, but they're going to be in like clown suits. Should be funny.
Oh,
I would be in the truck with the heater.
Good man, Jerry. Always a smart guy. Now, sitting on the other side of the table next to Jerry from the Department of History, its chair and the keeper of our abolitionist archives, it's Professor Roy Finkenbein.
Hey, Kathy. I'm giving in all sorts of ways today.
Oh, is he ever poor?
Blood dry. Blood dry.
He's got a little bit of gauze and a little pad there. So everybody be kind to Roy because he gave blood.
Well, in fact, I went into Beth's office because I still had my little sticker at that point.
It says,
be nice to me, I gave blood.
That's right.
And of course, at that point, she was, but now the sticker's in her trash.
You don't want to go home and drink a bottle of wine.
I was going to say,
have to kind of like
a thimble of wine, maybe.
Maybe a thimble of wine. And the person who could explain all of that is sitting next to Roy from the Department of Chemistry, our own Mr. Chemistry. It's Professor Matt Mayo.
Hi, Kathy.
Now,
a thimble full of wine?
Yeah, well, no.
What do you need explained? It's not enough.
I think that's called Lutheran communion.
That
would be right. Yeah.
Thimbleful of grape juice.
It's just that I know that you teach the chemistry courses that most of the nursing students have to take.
That's right.
They know all about things like hemoglobin and blood counts, and you're the guy that teaches them how to do that kind of stuff.
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Bits of it that way. So we don't want Roy going home and working on that bottle of Mad Dog.
Do not.
Do not. Do not. Ever at
20,
any time.
A new meaning for 20.
We don't want to for several reasons.
Yes. I know that in my dormitory days, we made a punch called Wild Puppy Punch using Mad Dog and various other mixers.
Probably like Sangria.
And then often a really bad bottle of Pop-Off would go in there as well. So that's why it was called Wild Puppy Punch, indeed.
A friend of mine once put a fifth of Guggenheimer in his radiator, and the car made it through the whole winter. He didn't antifreeze, and this was the next best thing,
that
and it worked.
Well, this is a show where you can send us questions on blood sugar, wine, or winos, whatever you want. We can certainly answer them. And if you send us questions and stump us, you win something. And if you send us questions and you don't stump us, you still win something. So how can you do that? You can email me, that's bushkt@udmercy.edu, or you may fax the professor at area code 313-993-1266, or you can get one of those 37-cent peel a stamp and stick it on an envelope and mail it to College of Liberal Arts and Education, University of Detroit Mercy, Post Office Box 19900, Detroit, Michigan 48219. And that email certainly works because we have a real special set of questions today that is going to commemorate this November, which is Native American Indian Month here in the United States. And these come from Carol Coulard and the staff at the Southwest Museum in California, a really great organization. All this right. was a team effort. And she writes, Dear Professor Bush, attached is a list of questions for Ask the Professor, and these questions are related to Native American Indians and are in recognition and celebration of Native American Indian Month this November. I believe what will be almost as telling as the questions submitted is the team effort that enabled this communication to happen. It took on a life of its own. With that being said and done, while a bit of entertainment, after all, this is Hollywood out here, this could be accomplished by your panel. We hope to stump the panel, but if we don't, we're at all times respectful listeners, as we hope that all listeners will be respectful to the Native American Indian population. And she lists the other team members, Dr. Dwayne King, the executive director of the Southwest Museum, Dina Apple, who is a Lakota Indian, who's their administrative specialist at the UCLA Archives, Eric Sanchez, who is part Navajo, David Grieve, who is the branch manager, William Lamberton, with Labor Ready Incorporated, and Aaron McConley, also with Labor Ready Incorporated, its Hollywood division. So on behalf of our group here with Ask the Prof, we thank Carol and all the people who put in a team effort. It looks like there are...
That's a great topic to discuss.
I know. Thank you. Blow away those hideous myths. You know, I'm stuck up Puritans. Anyway, here goes. She didn't give us any kind of percentage, so we can't ask you to do that math calc.
And Dan's not here to do the math.
Yeah. Well, we've got Jeff,
though. Oh, that's right.
Come on. He's the other person. One question before we start. Do people always hit you with what they do with Dan at lunch when there's a group of people and they give you the bill to figure it out?
Always.
Always.
Constantly.
Why do people do that
to I thought you were going to ask me about my heritage. Because my name. My name, Boats.
Yes.
It sounds like it could be an Indian name. And my first name, Jeff, with the extra E on the end, could mean chief.
How cool.
So every once in a while I'll get asked that.
So
but no,
excellent.
I'm not an Indian.
Now, if you were many boats, we'd...
Yeah, then we'd have some problems.
My middle name was a number, Jeff Three Boats or something.
Okay. Prior to the arrival of horses, how did Plains Indians people kill buffalo?
On foot?
That would be one way, but this is a way of killing a large number of
them. Run them,
you get them to stampede.
Drown them?
Run them over the cliff.
Wow, we have a real blast from the past here. Oh. Dr. Gregory Sumner from the Department of History has just joined us for a set of questions, again, celebrating Native American Indian Month.
Hollywood swinging, Greg.
There we go. Absolutely.
What's this kemosabe business?
Yes, right. Again, so the question is, again, prior to the arrival of the horse, how did Plains Indian people kill buffalo? Now, there is actually a place in outside of Calgary, Alberta, known for this.
Stampede them over cliffs?
That's right.
Calgary
buffalo
stampede.
Jumping.
Lemmings have the same problem, I think.
Yeah, except they're not as probably as much... to clean up afterwards.
They sure as heck didn't use guns.
No.
This was Canada, right?
No. This was in the U.S. They stampeded
Pre-horse.
Them off cliffs, killing as many as 600 buffalo at a single time.
Wow. That's a lot of hamburgers.
That sure is.
This is before the NRA.
Yes, way before that.
If they killed that many at one time, that must have been a gigantic tribe or nation, because they say that the Indians never wasted any part of the buffalo.
Well, no, and that's what I'm thinking. It must have been, too, a very, very large group that way, probably an entire nation of Indians. By the early 1800s, approximately 300 buffalo were still alive on the Great Plains. How many of the animals lived there earlier in the century that would be the period of their peak population?
Millions.
Tens of millions?
A billion.
Oh, more than tens. I mean, several tens of millions.
Unbelievable.
Billions hundred, and billions.
That's hard to imagine.
Where's Carl Sagan when you need
I mean.
100 million?
Close to 75 million.
Wow.
Buffalo.
Wow.
Shut up.
I mean, think wow. about that, eh? What would be the current buffalo population of the U.S. today?
1 million.
No.
No, sad,
no,
but
no,
true.
No.
Much smaller.
10,000?
Times that by two.
200.
200. See, you can do math, Kurt Singer.
I'm working on it. Man, my head hurt on that one.
Has anybody here ever eaten buffalo?
Yes.
Yeah,
no.
It's not bad.
It's cleaner than beef.
It's a little
beef.
Sweeter
yes.
than beef.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, mm-hmm. It does have kind of a sweet, kind of pungent taste to it. What animal product was necessary for the tanning of buckskin?
Fat.
Well, that's a good. That's an
tanning?
Interesting.
Yes. Isn't that sometimes done with urine, actually?
Sometimes, but this would be something else.
Animal product.
Yeah, it's an animal product.
Is it part of the horn?
Well, the horn would be attached to this product.
Head.
Would, well, it's something in the head.
Brain.
Yes, it's brains.
Huh. Well, brains are mostly fat.
Is it really?
About 60% fat.
So that my father was justified in calling me fathead. Okay. Carolyn notes here, as the saying goes, all animals have enough brains to tan their own hides. I think that's also said in most Catholic schools, too.
Okay. Tan your hide.
Class.
That's right. Name five important food crops that were indigenous to the Americas.
Maize.
Corn.
Okay.
Corn.
Yes, that's one.
That's two.
One.
Pumpkins.
Well, no, just one.
Soybeans.
Doesn't list soybeans.
Potatoes.
No potatoes.
They were not invented in Ireland.
No
tomatoes.
Yeah,
nuts.
Tomatoes.
Or tomatoes.
Corn, potatoes.
Tobacco. Not wheat, though?
It doesn't list that.
Chocolate.
No, wheat's from the old world.
Oh, no. Well, that's we're talking south. We're
tobacco.
Talking here, like continental United States and our beloved neighbor to the north.
Tobacco.
Tobacco.
Doesn't list tobacco either.
That's weird.
Although it is one, yeah.
How many do we have so far?
Okay, you've got three so far.
What are they?
Corn, tomatoes, potatoes. These are important food groups, not
food,
you know,
food products.
Not like weekend food.
Okay. Tobacco's not in the food pyramid.
No.
Sushi is out of the order here. No sushi here.
We're
I know some people for whom peyote is a major food.
I know some too. They're usually examples that we use in drug and alcohol abuse classes.
Yeah, the food pyramid.
Yeah. Think baseball game snack.
Hot dogs.
Buy me some
peanuts.
They had $8 beers back then.
They probably did. And let's see. You were talking about Pamela Anderson before.
Silicone.
No.
Watermelons.
Melons. Okay. There we go.
The watermelon family.
So we've got corn, tomato, potatoes, peanuts, melons. They also list beans, peas, and squash.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
In fact, corn, beans, and squash were the three sisters of North American Indian diet. Remember that from your American
history? That's right. Oh, this is taking me back.
Never eat a food that sounds like it sat on it.
No, indeed. What plant product did the Native American Indian people of the Northwest Coast weave into their capes and clothing?
Hemp.
No.
Well, Woody Harrelson would be mad.
I was going to say, he would be very upset. Think of a particular type of chest where you keep clothing.
Pamela Anderson.
No, a chest.
Clothing was the operative.
Cedar,
yes. Okay, so this would be something on a cedar tree.
Bark?
Yes.
Cedar.
It's the inner bark of cedar trees.
Well, they didn't want those moths getting in there. So
well, I really wonder.
Pleasant smelling. I mean, why not?
Mothballs.
What are mothballs made out of?
They're made out of naphthalene.
Yes, Matt teaches chemistry, so he knows all this good stuff.
I had Greg had me for in class, by the way. I'm sure he doesn't remember. But,
oh, no, I remember. Is that a toxic thing to have
absolutely,
in your house?
Absolutely.
It is.
That'll screw you up really good.
One of those mothball sandwiches.
Yeah, really? Anybody who passes them out for Halloween, you don't want to go back to that house anymore. Okay.
Naphthalene, yes.
What American Indian political entity is credited with having a major impact in the drafting of the U.S. Constitution?
The Albany Congress.
Iroquois Confederacy.
Yes, it was the Great League of the Iroquois.
Yeah. Well, I grew up next to a Seneca Nation.
There you go, from New York State.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's Great Law of Peace, she notes.
They have a great museum there, by the way, in Salamanca, New York, if anybody ever heads that way on Route 86.
Okay, really, if any of you people in California can't deal with good weather anymore, just head up to Upper New York State. There you go. During the course of the Lewis and Clark expedition, only one violent confrontation occurred between the Corps of Discovery and a group of American Indians. With whom and where did this occur? Well, while we think about bad violence, let's take a break.
It's an Ask the Professor flashback.
I'm your host, Edmund DeWint, and today we've got them all. The whole panel is right here today.
Should we hold hands? They won't do anything.
A magic circle.
Is that some kind of Unitarian ritual? You know, my in-laws always do this at Christmas and stuff. You know, they do that.
They eat dinner holding hands.
Yes.
Fun.
Okay. On my right, from the Department of Religious Studies, Professor George Pickering.
Well, it's less of a pleasure than it sometimes is. They won't touch me.
Can't take a chair.
Oh, you wanted to hold hands, George.
George, put your pants back on. We will.
And on George's right, The assistant dean of the College of Liberal Arts, Kathy Bush. Schaefer.
I'm so happy to be here.
I'd like to hold hands with Kathy anytime.
But you'd have to do it over George. Wow, that's intriguing.
All right.
And on Kathy's right from the Department of History, Professor Sarah Gravel.
Well, hi, Edwin.
Hi, Sarah. Sarah's right from the Department of English, Professor Claire Schumann-Hank Crabtree.
What?
All you gotta do is say cheers, Edwin.
No, I'm gonna sulk until I find out what that means. Cheers. Okay.
Madame Schumann-Hank was a very famous contralto.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, who toured the entire Western world in the 20th century, giving farewell concerts for about 35 years.
My forebear, Lotta Crabtree, as people in California might know, made millions of dollars singing.
Ooh, wow.
Operetta-style, musical-style stuff around the turn of the century. Lotta.
Neat. Lotta. Yes. It was her house that they were going through last week with all those questions. You see, the antiques and the jewels.
She left it to veterans and horses.
Good for her.
Okay. Well.
That's what they said.
No, Schumann-Hank. I should also...
You're listening to an encore presentation of a classic Ask the Professor program from January 2003. Matt Mayo and the current panel of professors will return later this summer with more brand new episodes of Ask the Professor. So send your questions today to atp@udmercy.edu.
And we're back with questions to celebrate Native American Indian Month. And you got the last one correct, but we were on the question about the Lewis and Clark expedition.
Nebraska.
I'm going to guess Mandan.
Yeah, there you go. It would be Nebraska. It was. It's really sad because there was one Blackfoot man who was stabbed to death, and another was shot in the stomach by the party that was under the direction of Meriwether Lewis. Mm. Isn't that awful? How terrible.
Was Nebraska playing Oklahoma at the time?
Could have been.
Maybe in lacrosse.
Although it's been generally accepted that disease epidemics decimated the native population of the Americas, recent reports have speculated that what percentage of America's indigenous population did die as a result of European diseases?
90?
That's a little bit low.
Wow.
But you got it right in that grouping.
The long-time estimate's been 85% to 90%.
Mm-hmm. This says 95%. Wow. Isn't that awful?
That makes sense.
Yeah. Wow. In the March 2002 issue of the Atlantic Monthly, on page 46, for those of you that want to look it up, it cited it as 95%.
Write that down.
I was going to say, come on. That's so awful. Place the following in the correct chronological order. Wounded Knee Massacre, Battle of the Little Bighorn, the Civil War, and American Indians being given their U.S. citizenship.
Civil War.
Right.
Little Bighorn.
Yep.
Wounded Knee.
Yep.
Citizenship.
Right. Absolutely. Wow. We can tell who teaches.
Bonus.
From 1877.
Can we, now I see Regis or what?
No. I think it's that chick from off of The View who's doing it now. Isn't that it?
Oh,
what's
Meredith
her name? Meredith
Vieira.
That was some bone they threw at her on.
Meredith Viagra, as a friend of mine refers to her as. Yeah. The Civil War ended in 1865.
Bob Dole.
Battle of Little Bighorn was 1878. Wounded Knee was 1890, and Sad But True, American Citizenship Act, 1924.
Yeeks.
Boy, oh boy. What U.S. state currently has the largest number of American Indian residents?
Number or percentage?
It says largest number.
Oklahoma.
No.
Minnesota? Alaska.
New Mexico.
No.
Arizona? Montana.
No.
Michigan.
Alaska.
No.
No?
Oh. All no.
Montana.
No, not Montana.
That's where you see the U.S. two sides with the bullet holes.
No, not Hawaii, no. But it's on the West Coast.
Oregon.
Not Oregon. Not Washington.
Alaska.
California.
There you go.
It's just kind of ironic, given that the traditional California Indians were wiped out.
Well, that seemed to happen everywhere, actually. How many Indian tribes and Alaska Native groups are recognized by the United States government?
280.
Actually, if you double that, you're right on the mark.
Shut up.
Shut up and be still.
Double it.
560.
560. You, Jerry, you are just being the math guy. Is it because you're sitting where Dan usually sits and you're there? Like, that you're
it's
just,
because he has an elementary school child. He's been practicing.
That's yeah, we have been practicing on
it. You and the dill man?
And, yeah, we're on, like, this week where the dill man was practicing on the short I spelling and
so forth.
And he did leave the T out of Christmas, but that was on Wednesday. He's got it now.
That's okay. He's down. He's down with that. For what is Sequoia? He's a Cherokee from 1770 to 1843, best remembered.
His tree.
Cherokee, inventing the Cherokee syllabary or alphabet.
That too.
That's right.
But.
That's true. But yeah, he had both of those. He created an 85-symbol syllabary that allowed the Cherokee language to be transformed into written form.
And what's the first thing he did with it?
Don't
translate
know.
The Bible?
A newspaper.
No.
Anyway.
Really? How cool.
Very quickly, the Cherokee started publishing a newspaper.
No zine or anything like that?
Excellent.
They still got removed.
Right. But.
If you drive along 86 through New York, you'll see signs, road signs, and it'll say the river, Allegheny River, and then it'll give the Seneca Indian word for it, which is Ohio.
Because I thought I was totally lost the first time I was in Upper New York State. I was like, what is this? But somebody explained it. I thought that is so great. What tribal language did the word teepee come from? This is a tribe that I know our dean speaks of very often because he...
The Lakota.
That's it, the Lakota. The first group of Lakotas were traveling with Buffalo Bill in Europe and were encamped, and the Europeans were allowed to visit the savages and subsequently asked Lakotas what they called their leather conical dwellings that they lived in. The Lakotas were perplexed by the question and responded in their language, Li on tipi, we live here. Thus, the word tipi was derived from that misunderstood conversation.
There's another translation of
pre-condominium.
There sure
obviously is.
But
you stupid Europeans.
Yeah, really, probably.
Go home.
Yeah, really. What was the actual first documented Thanksgiving in the United States?
1621.
Was
Squanto there?
No, he wasn't. This is totally a different part of the country.
This is in Virginia, right?
Mm-mm.
Oh, that's not the
Virginia
one.
No. This is the first documented Thanksgiving.
Because if you live in Virginia, they'll tell you the first documented one is in Virginia.
In Virginia, those folks will tell you everything
early Martha
came
Stewart
from Virginia.
Here.
Okay. You know?
Did the Lions lose that day?
Yes, they did.
Overtime.
They
usually
the
win on Thanksgiving.
Really.
Oh, that's right.
That's the only time they win all the time.
They begin their late season rush to save the coach's job.
Right.
Now, it warms my heart that these Puritans would come over, you know, with their Puritanism, and the first thing they would think to do as they settled is to have a very pagan ritual of harvest to celebrate the end of the harvest season.
Yeah, but, you know, they were desperate altogether for a bit of food, you know.
They sent an invitation to the Indians saying, bring your own veggies.
Yeah, really.
We have cranberry sauce only.
Actually, it was Juan de Anade, a conquistador, who led the first successful colonization of the Southwest. He hosted a feast and a play that honored this event in New Mexico, as he called it, on April 30th, 1598.
Wow, that's early.
Purple Harem was the band playing.
Wait, there's a New Mexico?
There's a New Mexico? Indeed.
I can't take credit
for
that.
I think that's the year El Paso was founded.
For that old Mexico.
Was it? Really?
Yeah, they celebrated their 400th anniversary while I was there in 98.
How and where did the real Pocahontas die, and what was the name of her husband?
She died in England.
John something.
Yeah, it is John. Think of the guy who was the boyfriend who became the Nazi in Sound of Music, his name.
Rolf.
That's right, yeah. Rolf.
Mr. Tobacco.
Hey, it's a clue, Jared. Don't make that face.
No, I recall standing outside there in Salzburg with this old couple, and they wanted me to take their photograph. This was about 15 years ago. And, you know, I went to take the picture, and I go, you know, this camera feels kind of light. And they go, well, we've been through the last 3 days. And I said, would you mind if I open this camera? You know, I don't think there's film in it.
Oh, my God.
And it was empty. So I loaded a roll of film in for them and, you know, kind of made their day. But it was right outside the Sound of Music.
So you knew the Roth thing. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought, how painful. I thought
maybe
you had to wear lederhosen in high school or something, dude, when you made
their
face.
No, way cool.
Bad visual place.
Yes.
Okay.
Jerry and Sound of Music.
Who led the massacre against a peaceful Cheyenne encampment at the Sand Creek in Sand Creek, Colorado?
Shivington, was it?
Yeah, Shivington. And what was his occupation? This is so pathetic.
Butcher?
Preacher.
He was. He was an ordained minister.
Yes, he was.
Oh.
He was the preacher man.
What state was Geronimo transported to after his initial capture?
Florida.
Yeah. Did you visit this or when you lived in Florida?
No, I just remember reading.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Trivial Pursuit.
Oh, this is kind of cool. How did the Indians of the Southeast Coast work with Harriet Tubman?
They helped smuggle slaves.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. They provided stations to her, for her Underground Railroad for refugee slaves. That is so great. Name two of the four sacred mountains of the Navajo tribe. Hmm. Two are in Colorado.
Pikes Peak.
Pikes Peak?
No, this would be, I think, the Spanish word for white.
Blanca.
Yeah, Blanca Peak in Colorado. That's one. And there's another one in Colorado. It's also a peak, as in Wreck of the...
Edmund Fitzgerald.
Hesperus.
Yes.
Okay, now do your Gordon Lightfoot impersonation.
It's been good to know you.
The others are Mount Taylor in New Mexico.
Is that near Taylor, Michigan?
Taylor, Kentucky.
Yeah, where it says Downriver Community. When you go to Taylor, the sign says Taylor.
Is that near Mount Trashmore? That's downriver. Right?
That's Riverview, I think.
Riverview.
Yeah, Mount Trashmore. You can go skiing on a landfill.
Yeah. Would that be toxic?
Yeah. We'll see. Those were 20 questions. We got a couple of them wrong, but I think we should declare all the people at the museum a winner. First of all, not only for sending these really great questions, but also, again, for their work at the museum and also just for celebrating National Native American...
Salute.
Salute.
I think you should send them what's left of those 100 grand bars.
I think I'm going to, because I know we can't. The budget will
Halloween.
Not... Yeah, I think there's just too many folks together on the team effort to send T-shirts, but I think 100 grand and maybe some bumper stickers. So we'll get those out to you. And again, we thank you for these. They were really, really good. And I hope everybody celebrates National Native American Indian Month, or as we say in Canada, the First Nations, eh? All right. Our next set of questions come from Nancy Perry of Glendale, California. And she writes, I sent in questions, profs. It had to be decades ago. I got a winner's package at that time, which was the autographed photograph and the photographed autograph.
Yeah,
there
we should
you
do
go.
That.
She said, I think it's time to send in some more questions.
She wants to see what we look like. We need another photograph.
Oh, man. No, you don't, honey.
When's the last photograph?
This will be the last time she comes.
I was going to say.
And we'll all get a stand-in, you know.
That's it. That's it. We'll all get really.
Kid Rock for me.
Oh, well, we're going to have to hold these questions about the Rose Bowl until next time. But let me thank the panel. Professor Mayo.
Later.
Professor Finkenbein.
Hey.
Okay. Professor Kurtzinger.
Watch the Grey Cup on Sunday at 4 o'clock.
Absolutely. Professor Sumner.
The Grey Cup, eh?
You got it. And Professor Boat.
Yes, sir.
All right. And this word now from the University of Detroit Mercy.
I don't want to just read the book. I want to write the book.
I don't want to just work for the company. I want to own the company.
I don't want to just live in the building. I want to design the building.
To some, those might sound like rather lofty goals, maybe a little out of reach.
I don't want to drive a sports car. Well, I do. I want to engineer one.
At University of Detroit Mercy, those are the people we want. The big thinkers, the dreamers. Because those are the people who make things happen. Great things. For themselves and others. And if you're one of them, either just out of high school or ready to transfer, UDM will make it happen for you. Call 1-800-635-5020 today. Or apply online at www.udmercy.edu. It's not too late.
I don't want to just hope for the cure. I want to discover the cure.
University of Detroit Mercy. We want great things for you.
Ask the Professor is transcribed in the facilities of the Briggs Building basement on the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Michael Bowman. Our technical director is Michael Jason, and our executive producer is the divine Dr. Barbara Bowles. So until next week, I'm your host, Kathy Bush. Go Wings!
And I'm Michael Jason, inviting you to join us again next week for another classic edition of Ask the Professor.